Well, good evening. It's certainly encouraging to see everybody out tonight, especially to our visitors. We're glad you are here, and we hope that you can stick around after services so that we can get to know you just a little bit better. Just by a little bit of a way of introduction, I'm not sure if you have noticed by now, maybe it was the lack of the pocket hanky, but I am not the Brother White that you are familiar with. But nonetheless, I definitely appreciate the opportunities that these elders have given me here to come and to present to you just a little bit about God's Word. It's hard to see just how fast time flies. I mean, we've already been here for 12 years now. It's hard to think just yesterday I was just a little kid that was about to start third grade here. And now, you know, 12 years go by, I'm already married, I'm on my last semester of college. And all a part of that, I was able to be a part of this family here for the last 12 years. And so it truly is an honor and a blessing to have been here for as long as I have. And I hope tonight that you take as much from this sermon as I have. So 1 Samuel chapter 14, if you'll open your Bibles. 1 Samuel chapter 14 is where we're going to be taking our lesson from this evening. 1 Samuel chapter 14. Now, while you're turning there, allow me to indulge you real quick on a little bit of an analogy. So think back to January 1st. It is time for your annual New Year's resolution. Now, some of you do them, some of you don't. But we're about halfway through the year, so this is a good opportunity for you to reflect back. If you even remember what your New Year's resolution was, think about what it was. And ask yourself, how's that going? Have you completed it? Have you started it? Do you even remember what it was? But essentially, New Year's resolutions are something that we started a long time ago. I really don't even know the origins of this, but it's something that we created to look back on this past year, see what our problems are, where can we improve in our lives, and we use these resolutions to create a solution to our problems. Now, I will use myself as an example here. A few years back, I had, for several years, my New Year's resolution was I was going to go to the gym, I was going to lift weights, and I was going to bulk up. Now, this podium might be kind of obstructing your view, but I don't know if you've noticed or not. I have not accomplished that. But I make that point just to say that New Year's resolutions essentially are no good unless you actually follow through on them. So in every facet of our life, it doesn't matter how old you are. You could be 12, you could be 21, you could be 61. We all encounter spiritual problems in our lives. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we go about solving that problem? Now here, you guys are familiar with things being in threes, so I figured I'd keep the status quo and I'll keep the sermon in threes. So how do we go about solving a problem? The first thing we have to do is we have to see the problem. Now, if you're still open to 1 Samuel 14, turn with me there if you will. I'm going to read this just a brief story about Jonathan and his armor bearer, and hopefully we can draw a little bit from it. So 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting in verse 1, and I'll be reading from the English Standard Version tonight. One day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of one was Bozaz, and the name of the other Sinna. The one crag rose in the north in front of Michmash, I'll get that right, and the other on the south in front of Geba. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work before us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart, do as you wish. Behold, I am with you heart and soul." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come to us, and we will show you a thing." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor-bearer killed them after him. So when we were going through this story, the first question we have to ask ourselves is, what was the problem in 1 Samuel chapter 14? Well, it's pretty clear early on in the passage that they tell us that the Israelites are in a continual conflict with the Philistines. Now, it may seem obvious at first, but the first step in solving a problem is we have to first acknowledge that there even is a problem, and we have to come to the understanding and determine what that problem is. So how do we go about determining what that problem is? Well, we have to be able to examine ourselves. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and in verse 5 tells us to examine ourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. James chapter 1 and starting in verse 23 and verse 24, it alludes to the idea of a man who looks into a mirror, which is a perfect segue into one of my favorite songs written by Michael Jackson. The song is entitled Man in the Mirror. Now, I just want to read just a few lines from this song. Now, I've gone over this sermon several times in my head, and I've had to fight the urge not to sing this song, so I encourage you to do the same. So it starts in this first line. He says, I'm going to make a change for once in my life. It's going to feel real good, going to make a difference, going to make it right. And if we skip down to the chorus, I think it's very important that we notice these words in this chorus. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways, for no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and then make the change. This can only be accomplished through the humility and the willingness to first find fault in yourself. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 and 6 tell us to likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you. Proverbs chapter 12, and in verse 15 tells us that the way of a foolish is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. If you skip just over to the next chapter, and in chapter 13 and in verse 10, he tells us, by insolence comes nothing but strife, but with those who take advice is wisdom. If we're able to have the humility to find our own faults, that'll then lead us the ability to listen to others who may even be able to help us with our problems. But I think truly we should have an attitude like that of David from Psalms 139. And in Psalms 139, in verses 23 through 24, he tells us, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there's any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Ultimately, sometimes we can't find the faults within ourselves sometimes. But if we have that humility and that desire and that passion that David shows here in Psalms 139, ultimately we can come to God and God can reveal to us what our faults may be. So now that we've been able to see what the problem is, the next step we need to do is we need to see the solution. Going back to the example in 1 Samuel chapter 14, he starts in verse 1 by saying, come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side. But if you were to skip down to verse 8, he starts to talk about his plan on how he's going to address this Philistine garrison. He says, then Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to these men, and we will show ourselves to them. But if they say to us, wait until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be a sign to us. As obvious as it may seem, problems won't be able to fix themselves. Ultimately, we have to be able to come up with a plan to address this problem. So how do we go about finding these solutions? Well, I think there's two ways that we can go about finding these solutions. The first example is given to us in Joshua chapter 1 and in verse 8. We can search the scriptures. So in Joshua chapter 1 and in verse 8, Moses had just passed away, and Joshua was then commanded to lead the Israelites. And God told Joshua in Joshua 1 and in verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. This book right here is given to us to guide us through any of our troubles in life, and ultimately this book right here has all the answers that you need. In fact, the bulk of Psalms 119, it's a lengthy book, I won't read it for the sake of time, but I encourage you to read it on your own time. But the bulk of Psalms 119 just talks about the importance of God's word. In fact, I believe in most Bibles, the title of Psalms 119 comes directly from Psalms 119 and verse 105. He says, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light unto my path. So it just goes to show he spends several hundred verses just telling you just how important these scriptures are for you. So then after we have searched the scriptures, we also have the ability to search after God. So in Matthew chapter 6 And in verse 33, he says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." And if you skip down a few verses into Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 7, he says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds. And the one who knocks, it will be opened." David goes on to tell us in 1 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 11 to seek the Lord, seek his strength, seek his presence continually. God is able to provide these answers for us, but ultimately we have to be willing to open up to him and ask for them. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6 tell us to trust in the Lord with all of our heart and to not lean on our own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. So when we're going about looking for these solutions, there's a few things we have to be mindful of and things we have to be careful. The first thing we have to be careful about is we have to know our limits when we are creating these solutions. Now, what I mean by that is when you're creating a solution for yourself, you have to be able to understand what you're physically capable of. Now, that's going to be different for everyone. Some people may be able to handle more than others, but we have to know where our limitations are for solving problems. So just to give you an idea of what I mean by that, go back to my New Year's resolution example. So my resolution used to be that I was going to go to the gym, I was going to lift weights, I was going to bulk up. Prior to that, I had never really gone to the gym. In fact, I maybe lifted weights a couple times in high school for basketball, but that was about it. I didn't have any ambition to go lift weights. But anyway, for my New Year's resolution, if I was going to go to the gym and start working out, does it seem feasible to go from never going to the gym at all to next week, I was going to go first thing Monday morning, go twice a day, 6 days a week. I was going to lift for 2 sessions, 3 hours apiece, drink 4 protein shakes, and I was going to do that all year. Does that seem like a feasible solution? No, of course not, because I've never been to the gym before. What makes you think I'm going to start going 12 times a week? Another example I have is if, let's say after church, Cody were to ask me to move my truck because it was blocking his truck. Would it be feasible for me to walk up to my truck and try to lift it with 2 hands and try to move it? Now, maybe if I had gone to the gym 12 times a week, maybe I could have moved it then. But even still, that's not feasible. We have to understand what our personal limitations are. And these examples may seem a little extreme, but the point I'm trying to make here is I think sometimes we treat our spiritual problems with these same kinds of solutions. We think that if we come up with this big drastic solution, it'll solve the problem. But the problem is we can't physically fulfill that solution because we don't know our own limitations. And ultimately, if we don't get the problem solved, we'll go discouraged, and ultimately we'll stop trying to solve the problem in the first place. Now, the second thing we have to be careful of when we're going about finding a solutions is we can't be insane. Now, before I lose you on this, let me explain what I mean by don't be insane. What I mean by that is I'm referring to what Albert Einstein once said. He once said that the definition of insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. A perfect example that I can think of comes from the prophets of Baal in 1 Kings chapter 18, starting in verse 26. Just to give you a little context before I read that of the story behind that, is Elijah has now challenged the prophets of Baal to a sort of a little competition. So they go upon Mount Carmel, they prepare a sacrifice, and they both call upon their gods to rain fire down from heaven. Now, Elijah lets the prophets of Baal go first. And so here's what happens, starting in verse 26 of 1 Kings chapter 18. "And they took the bull that was given to them, and they prepared it and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, 'O Baal, answer us.' But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. And at noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, 'Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he is relieving himself, or he's on a journey. Perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened.' And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. And as midday passed, they rave on until the time of the offering of the oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention." Now, just for a second, place yourself in the shoes of these prophets of Baal. I don't know about you, but if I were one of those prophets of Baal, and I'm starting first thing in the morning, and I'm shouting to the sky, hoping for fire to come down, after about 20 minutes of nothing happening, I'm going to start to get a little confused. I'm starting to wonder what is going on here. And you would think after about 30 minutes, maybe an hour of this, they give up. No, these guys are persistent. They think that they somehow, if they continue to shout for these hours, I mean, well into noon, they're convinced that somehow this is going to accomplish anything. So if you think about it, by Albert Einstein's definition, these prophets of Baal are insane, thinking that they can accomplish this stuff and it never will happen. Now, obviously, none of us will ever go up to a mount and try to rain fire from heaven. So I'm going to give you a little bit more of a practical example of what I mean by this idea of not being insane. So I'm in my last semester of college, and something I've noticed in this last few years is my study habits need a little bit of work. Now, what I mean by that is, last semester I was in a business marketing class, and I can remember the way the class was structured, you go to a lecture, and then you take a few exams, and that was about it. So I remember first exam rolling around, and I was preparing to study for this exam, and I was going through the lecture notes, I was looking over the test reviews, I did one or two practice tests, feeling pretty good. After that first exam, I didn't do great, not bad. I got a 74, wasn't great, but it's okay. Don't worry, my mom knows about it too. But so then after that first exam, you would think after a score like 74, you ask yourself, okay, where can I improve? What can I do differently? But I didn't do that. I blamed the exam. I said the professor worded it wrong. It was poorly worded. She threw questions in there that are not from the lecture. The second time around, that's a fluke. I got this. So the second time around, I studied the exact same way, so almost the exact hour. Lo and behold, I take my second exam. Boom, another 74. I've scored two consecutive 74s on my exams. And again, after two exams in a row, you would think, all right, I'm doing something wrong here. I need to do something different. Nope, I did not do that either. I thought maybe the second exam was a fluke, third time's a charm. So I go about studying for the exact same way for my third exam. And you think I might be making this up? I scored a third straight 74. And so by this point, I'm baffled. I'm like, what are the odds that I'm scoring three straight 74s on exams? I should be doing better. But in reality, what I need to be honest with myself is I didn't do anything different for studying, so why am I surprised that I'm getting the exact same score every time? And I think sometimes we make this same sort of problem with our spiritual lives. When we're going about solving a problem, the solution we use is the exact same every time, but we convince ourselves that it didn't work the first time, but it will work the second time. And we know really that's not the case. But I think sometimes we fall often in this misconception for one of two reasons. I think the first common reason we do that is because we really don't want to carry out the solution that we know we need to do. So going back to my example of tests, for me, I knew in order to score better on my exam, I needed to either study just a little bit longer, maybe study a little bit more effectively, maybe turn off the TV while I'm studying. But I didn't want to do any of that. I was okay with just doing the way I had. And I would continue to make excuses as to why that solution didn't work. I think the other reason why we may fall to this misconception is sometimes we know that the solution we need requires us to ultimately come to someone and admit that we have a problem to begin with. And I think a lot of times with our pride, it keeps us from doing that. But with all this, we have to know at some point that this solution is not going to work, and we need to continue to search for either another solution or find someone to help us. So now that we have finally seen the problem and we've seen the solution, finally what we need to do is we need to see it through. There's an Irish proverb I came across while preparing for this lesson, and I think it speaks well for this. It says, you'll never plow a field by turning it over in your mind. And I think I like the visual representation he gives here. Imagine you're a farmer and you're sitting on your front porch, sipping on your coffee, and you see your field out in front of you. And you come up with this idea, this plan of how you're going to conquer the field. You're going to figure out the direction you're going to go, the equipment you're going to use. It's a brilliant idea. The field's not going to plow itself just because you came up with the idea. You have to get up and you have to plow the field yourself. And I think ultimately what that's trying to tell us here is the solution is only effective as the action behind it. So I don't know about you, but right now is a very good time to be alive. And no, I am not referring to the fact that parents get to take their kids to school this week. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about the fact that football is back. I love football. I love everything about football. It's a great time to be alive for me right now. I love everything that comes with the game of football. It's more than just the 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon. I love the planning that comes behind it, the coaching, the film studying, all of that. I love it, all of it. So let's fast forward to February. It's the week of the Super Bowl. The Cowboys are playing the Chiefs. Now, yes, in my analogies, the Cowboys always make the Super Bowl. We'll see how it goes. But can you imagine Coach Garrett spending that whole week prior to the Super Bowl talking to the media and telling them how he's going to go about defeating the Chiefs? He watches film for countless hours. He comes up with a game plan for his players. He comes up, draws up some plays. Spends the whole week preparing for this game. And then 20 minutes before kickoff, he tells his team, you guys do whatever you want. I'm just going to watch the game. He doesn't do anything about it. Do you think he's going to have a job by the end of next season? No, of course not. The reason for that is you have wasted a whole week preparing and coming up with a plan, but ultimately you never carried that plan out, so it's essentially a waste of your time. And I think too often we fail to act on our solutions to these problems in our lives for maybe a few reasons. Maybe for one reason you have fear. Maybe you're afraid to take that first step in doing what needs to be done. Maybe you have doubt that the problem, that the solution will even work. Or maybe you have guilt or shame that there's even a problem to begin with. But lucky for us, there are tons of people just alone in this building tonight. I mean, if you look to your left, if you look to your right, there's not a person in this room who would not hesitate to help you out. And I know in the last 12 years that I've been here, I know there are several people here I can count on to help me through these struggles. But even if that's not good enough for you, I want you to know that the greatest help we have does not come from anyone in this building. It comes from God. And we see that clearly in 1 Samuel chapter 14, going back to our story at the beginning of this lesson. In verse 11, he says, "So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, 'Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves.' And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, 'Come up to us, and we will show you a thing.' And Jonathan said to his armor-bearer, 'Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel.' Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and the armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor-bearer killed them after him." So we see clearly in this story, we see the progression through the story about how Jonathan and his armor-bearer first see the problem, then they see the solution, and then now they knew that they had the Lord on their side, they were able to see the problem through, and through the help of God, they were able to defeat the Philistines. Now, there are several passages throughout the Bible that warn us about people who know what they need to do, but ultimately do not act upon them. And I think a good passage for that would be James chapter 2, starting in verse 14. So James in this passage here, he's referring to faith without works. But I think the analogy he uses here actually works just as well for the point I'm trying to make here tonight. So as I read James chapter 2 and in verse 14, I'm going to change up just a few words just to get my point across. James chapter 2 and starting in verse 14. "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has a plan but does not have action? Can that idea save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warm and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also an idea by itself, if it does not have action, is dead." James 4 and in verse 17, I think, sums up this point very well for me, straight into the point. I couldn't have worded it much better than myself. James 4:17 tells us that, "So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin." And I think a good quote to wrap up this lesson tonight comes from the great Arnold Glasgow, who once told us that an idea not coupled with action will never get any bigger than the brain cell it occupied. And I think ultimately what this is trying to tell us here is this idea that it doesn't matter how much planning we put into this, if we don't actually follow through on it, this idea is no better than the tiny little brain cell required to create the idea. So tonight, we all fit somewhere in this sermon. So the question I have to ask you tonight is, where do you fit in this process? Maybe for some of you tonight, you have not taken that first step with Jesus. Maybe you need to put him on in baptism. Or you have that opportunity now to be baptized. Or maybe you've already taken that first step with Jesus, but maybe you have allowed sin to enter your life and you haven't been the kind of Christian that you needed to be. You have that opportunity tonight. Maybe it's just in the quietude of your heart you need to make things right with God. Or maybe you just need the prayers of the saints. Whatever your spiritual need might be, there's no better time than the present. I encourage you now to come forward while we stand and sing.